on radio, online and on digital.
The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne
and on ABC Victoria.
My co-host today is Corinne Grant, comedian, author, star.
Troublemaker.
Television, Bombers supporter. We have that in common.
Yes.
We have that in common. We perhaps won't talk about the
Bombers. Oh, no, it's a wound that needs a little bit of time
to
heal.
It does. That's a very good way of putting it. Our guest today will be American folk singer and songwriter Christina Olsen, who's got a new media project coming out, which is quite interesting. We'll talk about that in a second. And Leah Annetta, who has written an interesting book. I think it's self-published, is it? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
It's a handsome book.
It is. It's beautiful.
It's a handsome book about the Baldwin Rotary Camberwell Sunday Market. No one can accuse us of not going there. I mean, this is a Melbourne phenomenon, this
yes,
thing.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it launched in about 1976, and it's probably the most successful Sunday morning market in the city, I guess.
Oh, absolutely, I would think.
Do you go there?
I used to live in that area, actually. Yeah, so I would pop down there on a Sunday morning when I got myself out of bed.
Yeah, I think I can see you in the picture here on the cover. Yeah. So we'll talk about that with Leah and Christina and her book, stroke CD. They'll be joining us shortly. But what have you been up to, Corinne?
All kinds of things. I've got a couple of gigs coming up next week. I'm going up to Brisbane to do the Brisbane Festival, which will be nice.
That's on now, is it?
It is on now. Yeah. So I think I'm hitting the tail end of it.
And so is that a one-woman show?
It's a one-woman show. It's a show called Have My Stuff, which I did in the Melbourne Comedy Festival a few years ago, where I give my possessions away on stage, which it seemed like a good idea, but you want to give away funny stuff. And I've done the show so many times now, I'm running out of amusing things to give people. So it might be just a pair of old jeans or something this time. I'm rifling through my cupboards trying to find something amusing to give away.
And how much have you given away in that time?
I don't know. I would have got a few hundred bits and pieces.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what, do you go to the Baldwin, the Campbell Market to stock up before you do this?
People always say to me, why don't you cheat? And I said, I just can't bring myself to cheating. They go, the audience would never know, but I would know.
So are you actually giving away stuff that means something to you?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a little bit of a story attached to it. Like, I can't just give away an old fry pan because I get someone up from the audience to sort of read out a little précis on what each item is. So I've given away things like my certificate to the Barbie fan club when I was a little kid.
How could you do that?
Don't say that. Because you can't hold on to everything. So I haven't given away anything that, you know, is precious. But, yeah, I've given away a lot of scrunchies, jewellery that I made myself. Remember split peas, dried split peas
yes.
we all used to make soup
yes.
out of? I went through a phase of making jewellery out of split peas, gluing it onto cardboard and wearing it around my neck.
It's funny, you know, when I used to edit the Weekend Australian magazine in The Australian. It comes out on a Saturday.
Yep.
And we had a fantastic column where one of our writers used to just follow the classified ad. So someone would be trying to sell something. So they might try to sell, you know, a Lazy Susan dish never used or something.
Right.
And she would ring the person and go, what's the story behind this item? And the story never failed to be fascinating.
Isn't that great?
How they found it, how they bought it 20 years ago, how it was given to them as a present. And I guess, you know, without having seen your show, the story behind some of the items would probably be very entertaining in themselves.
Yes, yeah, and I wrote a book called Lessons in Letting Go, which is about the process of me getting rid of a lot of stuff out of my house. I'm one of those hoarders like most people are, you know, there's stuff in your cupboards and under your bed and I'll get to it one day, and decided to do it. And it's about deciding what stories in your life are the ones worth keeping and what ones are actually a little bit irrelevant.
And how do you do that? I mean, I'm a terrible hoarder. And, you know, I've got stuff that I'll never look at again.
Yes.
But I just cannot bring to throw out. So how do you make that decision to say, this has got to go?
You sort of have to get back to why you started holding on to the stuff in the first place. And that's it. There's a lot of, and I have a lot of trouble with a lot of those television shows that give this idea that you can get rid of all of your stuff and clear out your entire life in one weekend. I mean, it's just not feasible. And anyone who tries to do that fails and then feels that they haven't done it correctly and then they give up. But it's about getting back to figuring out why you hold on to stuff. And then it becomes a little bit more easy to realise what's relevant in your life and what's not. And a lot of the stuff that we hold on to doesn't actually give us good memories either. You know, the half-finished projects, I call them psychological booby traps, the things you open a cupboard and go, oh, that's right.
Psychological booby traps.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think most people hoard.
Yes.
It takes a strong person. I think, you know, when our domestic situation changes, if we downsize or the kids move out and we go from a house to an apartment, I guess we're forced to, you know, get rid of all our stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we seem to have more and more boxes every time we move.
Yes, and we have the space to keep it all as well.
We do. And many of these boxes are unpacked from 3 houses ago.
Yes. Yeah.
And I say to my wife, is it time to get rid of this? And then we just can't bring ourselves to do it.
I know, it's hard. It is hard, but once you start the process, it becomes easier and easier as you go along. And you get it. It's kind of like doing an archaeological dig into your own life and finding the bits of it that tell the story that, you know, imagine if somebody else came into your house, you want them to get an idea of who you really are and the essence of you by looking through your stuff. And it's hard for them to do that if you've kept absolutely everything, the precious moments and the precious objects from your life get lost in amongst all of the other bits and pieces.
I find it hard to let go of things that direct me, that link me directly to my kids when they were young.
Right, yes.
You know, we forever have a debate about taking kids' books down to the local opportunity shop or whatever. And I know that I should do that, but it feels like somehow I'm letting go of my kids.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous.
But
I know that.
I know. It is illogical, but it's also part of the human condition, I think. And I talk a bit in the book about what I call time machines. And you can often find that there is one object and you pick it up and it takes you back. Just looking
Absolutely.
At it takes you back to that one moment in time. But then you'll find another 10 or 15 objects that do exactly the same thing. So you only need one of those to go back to that time. So if you've got 30 or 40 odd children's books, just keep the one that is the best time machine. So it's not about getting rid of absolutely everything. It's just getting rid of the doubling up.
The clutter.
Yeah.
So you're the perfect person to talk about these Sunday morning markets, which I got to say, I'm not a huge fan of them. I mean, I would have thought most men have had that thing where you walk along a market and you stay reasonably close to your wife or your girlfriend or your partner. And but you're looking at your watch the whole time. How many more pairs of cheap jeans can I look at? How many discarded pieces of jewellery? Are you a regular at these markets?
No, I'm not a regular because I like to keep things cleared out now. But I'm more a browser than a buyer as well.
Right.
Because I don't need any more stuff in my life. But there are really interesting stories to be heard. Like you were saying with the classified ads, you're getting back to where those things come from. And some of those stories are told in Leah's books too of objects that people have found that, you know, the story that went back behind that object. And the story is often more interesting than the object as well.
Yeah, I've often thought that, I mean, eventually the idea of following classifieds sort of got old-fashioned because classifieds sort of stopped.
Yes.
But I think I could probably adapt the idea for eBay.
Yeah, you could.
The things you see on eBay.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's always a great story behind them.
Yes. I would love to know the story. In Leah's book, there's a photograph of somebody wearing a full-sized lion's costume. I would love to know
where
that came
from. Well,
we've
all got one of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've all got one of those, of course.
So what else? You're doing something for Grand Final Week? I mean...
Yeah, I'm doing a show. I have been for 5 or 6 years, the Comics Lounge, which is a stand-up comedy venue in North Melbourne. Myself and a comedian called Adam Richard have been doing that weekend for the last, I think it's 6 or 7 years now. And it's a little thing. If you're not really into the footy... It's a place you can go along to. And
this is what, on a Saturday night?
So we're actually running Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week. So every night. So I'm emceeing and there'll be Adam Richard will be headlining and there'll be a few other comedians on the list as well. But it's a pub gig, you know. You can get your calamari and chips and sit down and have a beer. And
your pot and your, what do they call it?
Pot and Palmer.
Pot and a Palmer.
Yep.
And how many people does this venue hold? Because I'd say even though there's a lot of people that love footy in Melbourne, there's an awful lot of people... that want to get away from it.
Yeah, and do something a little bit different. I think it holds about 450 people.
Oh, wow.
It's a big venue. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's not a footy-type gig, and it sort of puts you outside of it. It can be a little bit hairy going out on grand final night as well if you're not into the football.
Because people are kind of juiced up. And
they are juiced up, You want to be in the right. You want to be in the right suburb, not the suburb that's just lost.
Yeah, I ought to have that feeling again, Corinne, like we did in 2000 and 1993 when Essendon won. Maybe we'll get that feeling again.
Yeah, 1993. And was it really that long ago?
Well, we won again in 2000.
Right, yes, that's right. That's still quite a while ago.
I suppose it is.
Quite a while ago.
12 years.
12 years.
Okay, you're listening to The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne. I'm Bruce Guthrie. My co-host today is Corinne Grant, comedian and author. Joining us shortly, Christina Olsen, who is an American folk singer-songwriter.
on 774 ABC Melbourne.
Christina is an American singer-songwriter and a multi-instrumentalist. I think you play the acoustic guitar, the steel body slide guitar, saxophone, concertina, mandolin, piano. Not all of those are in the
show
studio.
Off.
I play everything but hard to get, and I always figure it's better to easier to play many badly than one well. That's my specialty.
And you're an author as well, and we'll talk about this this very interesting kind of project that you're releasing. And I should tell listeners that Corinne Grant is in the studio with us.
Sorry,
co-host
everybody.
For today. So, Christina, this new project, which is called, it's got a very interesting title. Tell us the title.
It's called
and
They
the
Paid
relevance
Us.
Of it.
It's called They Paid Us in Tub Time. And in the 70s, one of my first gigs actually was playing at a place called Hot Tub Fever. And it was in the 70s, I think the real reason it really took off was because you could rent a room with a hot tub in it for an hour, which was much cheaper than renting a hotel for the whole night. So if someone wanted to make out with someone, it was definitely cheaper to get a hot tub room for an hour. And the problem they had was people would take longer than an hour to go in there and get in the tub and copulate and clean up and get out. And so there was a backlog of people in the lobby waiting urgently to get into the tub rooms, like until 3 a.m. And so a friend of mine, John, and I got a gig sitting there playing music in the lobby. I like to tell people that we actually played in the rooms with the tubs, but we didn't. We sat in the lobby in front of a fireplace. It was all very romantic and kind of goofy, and we were playing music. Of course, no one was listening to us. They were making out full go, you know, like as far as they could go without taking clothes off. And John used to start writing lyrics, like just making up lyrics about what was happening in front of us on the couches. And I'm like, John, stop it. They'll hear us. You know, pretty
That's
rude
hilarious.
Lyrics. And no one ever heard us. So it was early songwriter training. And we got paid in tub time. We didn't get paid in money.
So at the end of the gig, you can have an hour in the tub.
No, you got as many hours as you played. And we often would play 4 hours a night. So you get credit of 4 hours of tub time. Like, I don't need to be that clean. I'm not that clean a girl to start with.
How clean would it be?
That's gross.
I'm a bit worried about that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
No, when you said it was as soon as you started talking about how the thing ran, I just went, oh, the hygiene. Oh, the
like
hygiene.
A public health issue
exactly.
Just waiting to explode.
And guess what? AIDS happened, and that's why those things closed.
Yeah.
But before then, I would get paid in time, and I would trade it for haircuts or, you know, guitar lessons, anything I could do, because the hot tub fever was really hot back then.
Oh, wow.
So that's how I kind of, it was my strange commerce of no real currency. And
old school bartering system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you've just to give listeners an idea of this project, this is an e-book with songs, right?
Yeah. I got so excited about the idea of writing a book that didn't have to be printed and published, because the expense and the difficulty of carrying it around, and the true excitement for me was the idea of having embedded songs. And so this is a shock to me. I'm kind of cutting edge, which I'm so not cutting edge as a folk singer. But that was the interesting problem of putting the book out, is that ebooks, enhanced ebooks, are kind of a new thing, which are books that might have songs embedded or video clips or, you know, larger file size, basically, than a typical ebook, which is quite small to download. So I thought, well, how great. I'll write a book of stories that all the stories are connected to the songs and have the songs embedded inside the book. And that's what it is. The problem is that it's right now Apple is sort of holding on to the market for some reason. They're the ones that are good at large downloads of music files and stuff. So at the moment, it can really only be read as it's intended on some sort of Apple device like an iPad or an iPhone or iPod Touch, but not even a Mac computer. But I've also made a PDF file, Adobe PDF file, that you can read on any computer, and it has the songs embedded. It's not that kind of really swish ebook flashiness,
yep.
But it works just the same. It's just you have to read it on a computer or something.
It's an extraordinary idea. Like, it's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
So do all of the stories link together, or are they all standalone stories?
It's sort of roughly a memoir travelogue. So
right.
A lot of it is from my life. But because it's all just connected to the songs, I have freedom to write things like there's sudden fiction, very short fiction. In the book, they're all chapters and then also things I call interludes, which don't necessarily have to follow the rest of the format. They can be sudden fiction and have a song linked to it.
So it's sort of like the book has been structured like a composition in
right,
a number of
yeah,
ways.
Like
yeah.
a journey with music. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and how do you listen to the songs? Do you listen while you're reading before or after the chapter or however you like?
I'd say after, because when yeah. you're reading, you get through the text and then you see a little triangle that you press on one of these devices or click on your computer. And then if you have headphones on or if you've got speakers on your computer, you just hear it there. But I've got the lyrics written, so you can actually read the lyrics
right.
as the song plays. And so, yeah, I'd say for me, it's very hard to hear words different from the words I'm reading. Like,
yeah.
It's not landscape music, it's songs. So,
yes.
Like, I can't listen to songs with lyrics while I'm reading a book.
Yes, okay, right.
So I don't intend them to be at the same time like that.
Yeah.
And do you write differently? You know, your prose is different to your songwriting, presumably.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest freedom, because a song is the tiniest bit of real estate. You know, it's like it's so tiny what you get to say. And because there's music that's a distraction, you have to be clearer, I think, or you have to say things a little bit more repetitively in a song. So the space you have to say in a song is microscopic compared to a book. And it was like that first feeling of just landscape of like, oh, I have space. Then, of course, I had to get a very good editor to chop all that away.
So where did you have the idea to do this, Christina? Had you seen it been done before?
No, and that's the big problem is I think it's virtually brand new.
This is ground. This
it is really
disruptive thinking, as
totally
they say.
Disruptive thinking. And it's one of those things. It's an idea that's been fermenting for a long time, and in 10 seconds there'll be a million of them. But I think you can get a free one of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine from iTunes. It's free to download, and it has all sorts of little things in it that move, and video clips and bits of songs, not full songs. That was the first other one I've seen, and I've now heard there's another one that I haven't seen yet. But the real idea came from, there's a lovely book, well, you have a book by Tim Winton
yeah.
called Dirt Music.
Dirt Music, and it has
and it
a
had
CD
a
with it.
Accompanying CD, yeah. but the CD specifically didn't go exactly with the words.
That's right.
It was just something to enhance it. But another book I read, Vikram Seth's book, An Equal Music, where he talks so elegantly about classical music and this newfound Bach manuscripts. And the way he writes is so virtuosic to my eyes that I just wanted to hear that music. And the last page of the book, I can't believe it. It says, there's a CD. And I'm like, oh, why did you tell me before?
Yeah.
And so then I had to order the CD and read the whole bloody book again and to listen to the tracks. But how often am I sitting next to a stereo when I'm reading a book? Almost never. As a touring musician, I'm in a bus or on a train or in a plane or in a line at a bank or whatever. So it was so exciting to me. The second I heard of the concept or thought of the concept, you could have songs inside. It was like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. And in the writing of the book and the accompanying music, which came first, or did it change with each chapter, whether it was the song or the chapter that came first?
Very good question. She's an author, so she knows these things. it went back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
Some songs were already sitting there in the pipeline waiting to be recorded, and I didn't have a venue for it. So I thought, oh, I'll build something around that. And there's other older songs. 10 of the songs are brand new songs, and 10 of the songs have been recorded before.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the old songs, there was a story that I never really got to tell,
yes.
the story that was the building of the song.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell that, so...
Yes.
That.
Yeah, because that's the thing with a song, isn't it? Everything becomes very allegorical and poetic, and you don't get to really bleed out the entire story behind it.
Yeah.
So I think this new media stuff is really exciting. These opportunities to, you can do a book and put music in it, but you could also put artwork in
exactly.
it and photographs and everything. You could lose yourself in one particular publication for far more hours than
yeah.
if it was just text.
Well, and I was just talking to Leah, who'll be in shortly, who was saying, you know, the expense of color plates printing
yes.
is huge. And the wild thing, you know, I was able to put pictures and drawings and all sorts of things in this book. They cost me 25 cents extra to embed a picture.
Wow.
You know, like, wow.
So,
yeah. But the big problem then is that thing can get too large band, you know, download size, which is what I've got.
Right.
Issues. Anyway, it is a very wonderful and freeing time. And just for the environmentalists, you know, you don't have to chop down trees and store books that get moldy. And, oh, my God, you know.
That's right.
And
yeah.
For a the instant gratification world, I was just out back on tour, and I'm on, I have an ebook library card back in California, and I ordered a book, and I'm sitting in a back road somewhere, and the book came through the library, and it's in my...
It's amazing. Yeah. I've got exactly that.
Isn't it incredible?
Isn't it extraordinary?
Because, like, as a traveling person, how do you ever get a book out of a library? You don't. You have to buy things, and you carry them, and you drop them with people. And I like reading, like, 20 books at once. I never read just one book sequentially.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, yeah, you can't...
I don't know how you... I can't switch between books. No.
Oh, I can't only read one because I want something that's very thought, deep, serious. And then I want something that's frivolous and light. And I want something that's like, you know, information that's I'm studying or...
I'd get them all confused.
Oh, no, you got to get into this, Corinne. I do that too. Not 20, maybe two or three.
Right.
But you're right. Sometimes you just want to read a thriller and go to sleep. And then sometimes you want to read something that's thought-provoking and... Oh, no, you've got to get into this.
A different, well, no, everyone's body and mind is different. She's a real author. She probably just...
So I'm doubting. I think I'm just too linear for it.
Well, but I think that's good, too. But I have different hours of the day for books. You know, like late at night, I cannot read deep things. I have to read something that's lighter. And, you know, like music has different times of the day as well.
Yes. I get what I call altitude stupidity. So when I'm in an aeroplane, I cannot read anything that takes the remotest amount of concentration.
It's true. And you get on an aeroplane, you think, I'm going to do all this good work.
Yeah, and nothing happens.
They come down, they offer you a drink, and
you go,
okay,
whatever.
I'll take
that. It's going to Australia, come on.
So we should talk a little bit about you, Christina. You're American, obviously. You live in California.
Yep.
But you spend a lot of time here, by the sound of it.
I do. I love your country. I've been coming over since the mid-90s, I think, and I come every year for 2 to 4 or 5 months. And sometimes I had a chance to live here for full-time for a few years. I taught at a conservatorium of music up north. So I've had a lot of time, and fabulous.
You've actually spent time living and working here.
Yeah, 3 years.
Whereabouts up north?
Yeah. Lismore.
Oh,
near
okay.
Byron Bay.
Yeah. Lovely.
Little Northern Rivers Conservatorium.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very sweet.
And so you recorded the songs for this. I don't quite know whether to call
it an album or an enhanced
for this.
E-book. The enhanced
in Melbourne, right?
In Melbourne, yeah. Wonderful studio.
Now, can we impose and ask you to play a song for us?
Of course.
And if you want to do a bit of a read before you go into the song, is that possible?
I'd love that.
Just whatever you think. And
I'll give us a taste of how the two work together.
How the two work together, if you like. So, Christina Olsen, over to you. This is from her new album, e-book, that's what I'm going to call it.
Yes.
Yep.
They paid us in tub time. Over to you.
Chapter 6, Toe-Sucking, Venice and New Zealand. We have a new housemate named Jorley. She can do anything. She's an organic gardener. She makes unbelievably delicious, healthy things to eat. She's a friend to any animal. She's writing a screenplay, and she can do cartoon voices. And she is beautiful with a wild tumble of red curls. She is sitting on the kitchen counter with her knees and kimono open, just enough to reveal her total body nakedness. She is eating a pomegranate, the translucent red juice staining her fingers, lips, and chest. She has got to go. We are talking about something humdrum, and she drops in. While I was getting my toes sucked, I was getting your toes sucked, I interrupt. She looks at me in the way that only lesbians can and says, don't tell me you've never had your toes sucked. Kind of like she's really saying, don't tell me you've never had an orgasm. How do straight women survive? I feel so inferior. I vow to immediately go out and get my toes sucked, which is a problem because if you have an agenda, men can sense that, like they can sense what grade and brand of oil their car most prefers and where the best internet porn sites are. So while it might normally take a few months to find a man to become mutually attracted to, now I'm finding that when I walk into a room, the room instantly clears of men, like I have a giant, fluorescent, flashing sign above my head that says, "Warning! Agenda! She wants her toes sucked!" Years go by. No action. It's getting desperate. I'm in New Zealand on tour. Everywhere I go, there are great flocks of women. I tell stories on stage between songs about backpacking. Great flocks of women invite me to their favorite wilderness secret places. I acquiesce and join three women for a backpacking trip between concert dates. The whole time I'm complaining about how I can never get laid. What fun I must have been. Offhand, Rosie says, "Oh, I know someone I can set you up with." "Really?" She proceeds to describe someone not really my type. Doesn't matter. Sounds like he's male. He'll do. We continue hiking. Why can't I just become a lesbian? Sounds like it would be easier. It's hot. We see a swimming hole above a waterfall way down a steep granite slope. We take the risk, inching our way down the slick surface to the cold water. We strip naked and shriek and splash at the sudden coldness. We feel so far from any trace of people. It's just us gals in the wilderness. Rosie looks up and sees a man way above on the trail, looking for at the spectacle of the four of us. Oh, well, I'm thinking, why doesn't he just come down and suck my toes? That makes him vanish. The next day it's cooler. We're still hiking. Oh, I can think of someone much better, Rosie says, out of the blue, and goes on to describe a man much more my type, who happens to live near the trailhead, where we will emerge sometime the next day. An organic farmer with an exotic accent and a twinkle in his eye, who's been single for 2 years. His name is Eric. Oh, yes. And here's the song. There's a bit more, and I'll let the listeners wonder if toes were sucked or not. But here is the tune, which is called If I Stayed. And if I stayed here with you, I'd make blackberry pies from the fruit of your vine, till I'd stripped your vine dry if I were to stay. Hey, 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 hey. And if I stayed here with you, my feet would grow hard, walking barefoot all the day, picking berries in your yard if I were to stay. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey. And if I stayed here with you, my lips berry stained, we'd make love every day till you're tired of me that way if I were to stay. Hey, 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 hey. And if I stayed here with you, my skin would take your smell, my feet grow roots as well, till I no longer was myself if I were to stay. Hey, 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 hey. If I were to stay. Hey, 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 hey. If I were to stay. Hey, 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 hey.
Wonderful.
Oh, that was great.
Thank you.
Christina Olsen, and that's from her new album ebook, They Paid Us in Tub Time. And Corinne and I are wondering whether there was toe sucking.
Yes. We're going to have to
get the book.
In the organic garden, no less.
Well, yeah. Perhaps. Or it might have had something to do with a tub, because the book has a lot of tubs in it.
Right, right. This is a constant
And you like
thing.
A clean foot, don't you? Yeah. Oh, I'm giving too much away, as usual.
So if listeners wanted to get hold of the album ebook, is it up on iTunes?
It's in the pipeline and should be there any second now. And
right.
In the meanwhile, you can go to my website, which is christinaolsen.net, and there's a link that you can click. It'll send me an email, and I can send you either a PDF or a fancy Apple version.
Oh, fantastic. So, okay. Well, in a moment, our other guest, Leah Annetta, will join us. And Leah has written a book about the Camberwell Sunday morning market, mm-hmm. I guess we call it, Corinne, don't we?
Yeah, Camberwell Markets.
Camberwell Markets, which I think is run by Baldwin Rotary and has been since 1976. Do you frequent these places, Christina?
I've been there once.
Have you?
Was hanging out with a Sicilian tango dancer, and he was shocked that I had not been to that market and dragged me down there, and he, of course, knew all the best foods to buy.
Well, who else is going to take you to the Camberwell Markets except a Sicilian tango dancer?
Of course. I've had a great experience of it.
Does the Sicilian tango dancer make it into the ebook?
Of course, but his name is not mentioned.
To protect him or you, I'm not sure which one.
Both.
Yeah. So how long are you in the country for now? Where do you go next?
I'm going to Bali to the Ubud Writers Festival, which Corinne has been to a bunch of times.
I went there last year. Yeah, yeah.
I'm so excited.
It's just a wonderful festival. It's really, you will have an absolute ball, and the music and the culture and the traditional dancing, and it's the authors from all around the world. It's really, really spectacular.
Incredibly excited.
That does sound amazing. I've only been invited to one writers festival.
Right.
That was the Sydney Writers Festival 3 years ago, and I never got another invite.
Well, that's instructive, isn't it?
But isn't that? That's quite impressive, a major city writers festival.
Well, I guess so. I never got invited to Ubud.
Well, But maybe I'll
write an album e-book and see what happens.
I'll have to get cracking on a
talk about, you know, toe sucking or something
on another project. I mean, obviously, California. Where were you born in California, Christina?
I was San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury.
It's got an extraordinary, you know, heritage of producing fantastic singer songwriters. So, who influenced you to become to travel this road? I guess.
Well, the first obvious people was, I think I heard Joan Baez in a Unitarian church when I was 5 years old, before she had any records out, and I also heard Bob Dylan, and those were the backdrop. But it does have a great tradition of that. But one of the big highlights of traveling the world is I find incredible writers and musicians all over the world, and I feel like my country has a bit of a lion's share of the market, which is not necessarily fair, because I know, you know, some of my great heroes of musicians are right here in Melbourne and in Australia. So there's great musicians everywhere. Sometimes American get more voice than I think they should, perhaps.
That's what happens with the dominant culture, isn't it?
It's true.
Yeah.
And that's one of the joys of traveling, is that it takes one's ego down a big step all the time.
We've been speaking with Christina Olsen, American singer-songwriter. Please stay there, Christina.
I will.
And in the moment, we will bring in our second guest, author Leah Annetta.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
And we've now been joined by Leah Annetta, who has written a most interesting book called Sunday Service, which is the story behind the Borwin Rotary Campbell Sunday Market and the fascinating people who, I guess, have been part of it since, what, 1976, Leah, is that?
Yes, it started in 1976, and in the time from then to now, they've raised over $10 million.
Were you even born then? You don't look old enough to...
Very kind of you. Yes, I was.
But too young to run a stall.
I was out of nappies well and truly by then. But apparently it's made them the richest Rotary Club in the world, except for a Texan club that has an oil well.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's been amazingly successful.
Wow.
Yeah, just phenomenal.
Trust the Texans.
Yeah, of course.
Oh. Yeah.
I like to think that Rotary Club actually owns an oil well. That would be spectacular, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm sure that in some of the countries that they operate in, they've got some shares in one, you know, helping the local community or something.
Yes. So out of that $10 million that Rotary has raised through the Camberwell Market, where has that money gone?
Well, all of it's used for charitable purposes. There's absolutely no administration costs whatsoever. So all the people rattling their little cups at the gates do all that voluntarily at 5 a.m. every Sunday. But under the agreement they have with the council, which allows them to use the land, a certain proportion of that is spent in the local area, about 20%.
Right.
And about 20% of it is spent overseas, and the rest of it is spent within Australia on various Rotary projects. But the reach of these projects is phenomenal. I would have had no idea. I sort of thought of Rotary as a bit of a benign social organisation for people who'd retired. And I attended one of their meetings to request people's stories about the market. And at that meeting, they had their standard summary of, you know, what the Rotary Club was up to, the projects that were running. And it was like watching a sort of humanitarian organisation talk about incredibly sophisticated projects, you know, enormous amounts of work, because they've got huge amounts of expertise to tap into. People who've run big businesses, had long careers as accountants, lawyers, you know, all sorts of business background, and they bring that to bear on the market, which makes it hugely successful, but also on these other projects. It's just, I can't recommend the organisation highly enough. I think probably that it's viewed by people maybe of my age group, our age group, if I can sort of generalise, as something done by older people, that sort of idea of community service. But if you ever feel frustrated that there's nothing you can do about, you know, ills you see in the world, these sorts of organisations are
They are
amazing.
Fantastic. And in their own way, they do great things for authors too, Corinne. I don't know if you've ever addressed a Rotary Club.
I haven't. Well, I probably did when I was a kid, because my dad was a Rotary member. Oh. So I'm sure at some time when I was 17 and precocious, I got up and gave a speech on something, and they all very politely sat there and listened
to
the brat.
Were you invited back?
No.
I've sold many a book at a Rotary function.
Right.
Because you speak. They feed you, and then they buy a book.
And they're really interested.
And it's fantastic. Right, they're a terrific audience.
And they were hugely supportive. I mean, a lot of them got in contact with me about great stories they had about the market.
I bet.
Yes.
So the market started in 1976, presumably humble beginnings. And in those days, of course, there would have been no Sunday trading.
That's exactly
so
right.
It was a deserted space and a logical thing to do.
Well, I was really interested. I think I was just nosy. The idea of writing the book gave me an excuse to talk to everybody that I'd been dying to talk to and ask them really, really, you know, nosy questions. But the stories that came out of it, I mean, I couldn't have written them You know, it's been a fascinating experience. And one of them was about the sort of battles over Sunday trading, the battles with developers. Because, of course, this is prime land just behind Burke Road in Camberwell. Oh. I mean, it must be worth an absolute fortune.
Hate to think about it would be worth.
Well, and there were various people who sort of vied for it, including the sort of Floyd Podgornick story, which obviously ended very badly for Floyd, but also bankrupted the council at the time. It's the stories, as I say, I had no idea about when I embarked on the project, and sort of local librarians were a font of knowledge, and I could sort of follow rabbits down rabbit holes, but I couldn't have wished for better stories about the controversy that had arisen over the market. But to get back to your earlier point, it was initially very successful. It didn't even really have humble beginnings. It immediately kicked off extremely
well.
Did it
from day one? It was a success.
Within the first weeks, it was, you know, full, and thousands of people were coming through. As they say, it was sort of the right idea in the right place at the right time.
And the thinking is just basically, what, bric-a-brac and...
Well, it's about half traders who rent their stalls semi-permanently, and a lot of those people are people who've had galleries and shops, so you can get some very high-end stuff. There's a like John Vertanen, who has some amazing paintings there, you know, that sell for thousands. And he had a gallery originally and lost the overheads and found he was selling great stuff at the market and just sells at the market as well as some freelance stuff. And then about half of that is casual traders who'll come in and essentially do a garage sale, but you don't really want 5,000 people coming to your garage. So it's fantastic to be able to do it at the market.
There's a great story in the book that you've reprinted that was written by Kate Kennedy.
Yes.
And I read that this morning, and it's just so beautifully written. And what it's a great fantastic. Find, too, because that's before she became a well-known author.
Yeah. And she was very generous. She allowed me to publish that story, you know, completely gratis, which was lovely. But it's such a terrific story. Not only is the story fantastic and set at the market, but it was the winning entry for a short story competition run by the council, which had prize money from the Rotary Club generated through the market.
Yes.
So it's a nice little circle.
Yeah, and it's a great find, and it really sets that book off. And, of course, the history of how the whole market came about, the controversy that it went through. It was a really interesting – I was remembering things from the 80s, and I went, oh, I forgot about all of that, and Sunday trading and how controversial that was at the time, and all of that's covered in the book. It's a really great read.
Well, the involvement of, you know, Dr. Jim Cairns and stuff too in the Sunday trading protests. I mean, it was just – yeah, it was really, really topical. It was I looked through the old newspapers, and it was in there every day for months and months and months. It was a huge deal, because as was the development stuff.
Well, the tension would have been that suddenly the traders have got, you know, a reason to open on Sundays, but their parking space, I guess, was going over to the market. So that, how was that resolved in the end?
It took a while, but I think that the local traders came to realise that the throngs of people who were coming to the market were then dispersing into the local shopping area, particularly the cafes and restaurants. I mean, really owed their livelihood to people buying a coffee and a muffin before, after or during their sort of market splurge. But also the bookshops and the clothes shops, they came to realise that there was a lot of traffic flowing from the market. So a bit of a happy medium was reached, that the market, everyone's got to be out by one, which means that in the afternoon the car park is free, but in the morning they get the pedestrian traffic of people who've parked for the market but then dispersed throughout the shopping centre. And if you want to do a supermarket shop, you'll come after one.
And then the next big challenge, which you've already mentioned, was when Camberwell Council, I think, decided to accept Floyd Podgornick's plan to redevelop the area. And then the council changed because of action in the local area. I think they got new councillors in, and that meant that Podgornick's project didn't go ahead. He sued, I think, and then the council really had to sell off things to pay. And then,
tragically,
Floyd Podgornick committed suicide, didn't he?
That's exactly right. There was a huge community backlash, and that made its way to the ballot box, and they managed to vote in an anti-development council, whereas they had a pro-development council. The council sort of repudiated the contract. Podgornick sued, and in an effort to settle it all, they bought him out, effectively. But in doing so, they bankrupted the council. They hadn't really factored in just how much this was going to cost. And the entire administrator was brought in. It was, you know, it's very Dallas. You know, I never thought when I started researching the Camberwell Market and the Baldwin Rotary Club that there'd be such sort of stories of, you know, high flyers and, you know, and tragedy. And, you know, it was really quite dramatic.
Yeah. And what about some of the characters there? I mean, I read in the book that some say basically if there was no market, there'd be no me.
Yeah.
I mean, they really live for it, don't they?
Yes, and people are really part of a close-knit community, and it's such a diverse community, so all the traders know each other, but you've got such a diversity of backgrounds and age groups, and, like, you know, Francis up near the sort of Station Street gate, everybody knows Francis and goes and says hello. He's, you know, mid-80s, been there virtually since the beginning, and without that, he'd be quite lost. You know, that's his purpose all week, is gathering up the stuff that he then sells. Everybody comes and says hi and people bring him a coffee. And, you know, he's a real iconic part of the market. And you can imagine that if that were to go, that would be a huge gap, which is why the sort of the double meaning of the title of the book, Sunday Service, because for a lot of people it's a bit of a religious thing in the way that going to Mass used to be a social and regular community thing. Going to the market for a lot of people is that same social community, you know, cohesion experience, and obviously Sunday Service because the service that the Rotary Club are performing, you know, it's a lot of infrastructure to keep it going, not to mention sort of getting up at 4 a.m. and being there for several hours.
Have that.
Yeah.
So what's the most expensive thing you've ever bought at the market?
Well, without disclosing price, because I don't think I've ever told my husband. the carousel animals that are in the picture on the back of the book.
Oh, it discloses. It discloses the price.
Yes, a price.
Not necessarily the price.
Were a fantastic find. Yeah, it's an 1850s continental carousel animals.
Vince, if you're listening, because I've just read your name here.
You better be listening.
Turn off for the moment, would you? So so you can spend thousands.
You can spend that. I mean, particularly, as I said, John Vatanen with his artworks there, many of those artworks are in the, you know, tens of thousands. He's got beautiful things there. But his market is such, you know, the demographic of people walking through, you have people with that sort of money to spend. You have people who are in a well-to-do, you know, area
Melbourne,
or
yeah.
people attracted from various surrounding well-to-do areas. They may see a painting they like at the Camberwell Market and spend $10,000 on it.
And then at the other end of the scale, you've got the button lady
who's
been there for forever selling buttons. And there's that gorgeous little story in there about the eight-year-old girl who didn't have any money.
Yeah, she dropped her money.
Saved all the coins up to buy her buttons and then lost her money.
But she's so generous to me and Elizabeth. I spoke to her a few times and there was a tin I liked and I thought, oh, how much? And she gives it to you.
Yes.
You know, people are just so sweet, you know. And I suppose the connection that's forged is more important to her than the money. And
absolutely.
For a lot of people, that's the case. I think a lot of the traders, they really enjoy the interaction with the people and with the kids and the people who've been coming for years. And like the book lady, Rachel, who's got the bookstall there. My kids go, they call it the Very Good Bookstall.
Right.
You know, and when I say, you know, we can't buy anything, they always know they're going to get past me and be allowed to buy a book. So they go, can we just go and have a look at the Very Good Bookstall? You know, because you can never deny your children a book.
So, Christina, these markets are popular in around Venice too. You live in Venice Beach in California. I mean, is this a Sunday morning thing in America?
We have like organic farmers markets.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing that's confusing to me is that in both the UK and in Australia, you have these markets that have everything. That's mysterious to me. Because, you know, I go to the organic farmers market every Friday morning and there's another one on Sunday morning. But they're not allowed to sell things that aren't grown, basically.
So, very different.
Venice Beach is kind of a rat bag of garbage that you can buy, but it's nothing like that. That's a whole different world.
It's interesting you bring in this sort of British example, because I think that is maybe our British heritage. Yes. It's a steptoe and son type of mentality, isn't it? You know, that sort
of course.
You know, sold off the back of a barrow, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of that tradition, I think, that coming from a sort of British background, a lot of Australians
there's
would share.
There's the story of the stallholder in there who came from Brighton. He was a tapper or a...
Yeah, because you'd knock on the door.
Yes,
and say anything to sell.
Yeah.
And people would bring out stuff. But speaking about the decluttering stuff as well, you book in your stall and you've got to do it about 2 months in advance, and it's fantastic because from then on you cast an appraising eye over everything you own for 2 months, and you have like a corner and you know, you get down a vase for flowers, you look at the other three and you think, I don't really use those, and they go in the corner. It's a really good way to do it because you've got a run-up. You know, you have 2 months where you've got to book in advance.
So you've been a buyer and a seller.
I have. And often of the same stuff at greatly reduced prices. I'm actually singing. I'm a singer as well. I'm singing for the Rotary Club. They've got their 40th birthday coming up. And I've written them a little song. And one of the things in it is about selling in 50-cent baskets things I bought for $5 at the market. And it's quite a bit of that. You sort of almost like you say to your children, you can't have any toys until you give some away. You have to do that to yourself a bit too.
Yes.
I'm not going to buy anything until I clear out some things.
Yeah. And so the book, is it self-published? No, it's Bounce Books.
It is self-published.
Okay.
Yeah. I had offers to publish it, but I'm a bit of a control freak. So, and talking about Rotarians being great buyers, I had a bit of a captive market. So it was something that was quite easy to self-publish, knowing that I had, you know, a guaranteed number of sales, which made it possible
to
do.
You'll probably be on the bestseller list for this one. And are you selling it at the market?
Yeah, it's sold at the Little Blue Caravan. It can also be purchased from me directly, and the local, the Dimmicks in Camberwell and the Readings in Hawthorne also have it.
And what's it cost?
It varies. It costs more at the shops. than it costs at the caravan. Okay. It's $40 at the caravan or from me, and Rotarians get it cheaper.
And you'd call it a coffee table book.
I would call it a coffee table book. You'd be proud. Yeah, hardcover coffee table book. Yeah. So a lot of people have bought it as gifts. So the people they know love the market.
We've got e-books over here, and we've got coffee table
books.
Well,
I was talking with Christina about e-books because I have, you know, another book that I'm looking to get published, and I think e-books is the way to go in terms of cost.
Yeah. Mm. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Bruce Guthrie. Our guests have been Christina Olsen and Leo Netta, whose book Sunday Service is available at the Campbell Market, and Corinne Grant. I shouldn't fail to mention you.
No, that's all right.
Thanks for your help, Corinne. Author, comedian, and who's doing lots of gigs around town.
Sure.
And a fellow Essendon supporter. In fact, we're surrounded by Essendon supporters. Thanks for joining us. It's been fun.
The Conversation Hour podcasts are available at abc.net.au/Melbourne. Subscribe now and you'll receive automatic updates with special guests, interesting interviews. It's a bit of fun. You'll be mad not to subscribe. abc.net.au/Melbourne.